Greetings and welcome back to TanakhStudy.com, the podcast program in which we study Parashat HaShavua over six podcasts, broadcast during the week in which that parasha is read. My name is Yitzchak Yad Shalom, and I'm delighted to be studying the second half of Sefer Shemot with you. This is our final podcast on Parashat Ki Tisa. We are now in Perek Lamed Daled, Pasuk Yod Aleph, and we'll go to the end of the Perek. And as mentioned in the previous podcast, Moshe has now received, after lengthy negotiations with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has received assurance that the Brit is reconfirmed, and indeed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make a Brit in which it will be demonstrated that his relationship with Bnei Yisrael is a unique one, and they are his special nation. And now the terms of the Brit. And there are really two components to this bit. One is the terms of the Brit, and one is the aftermath of this entire event. Pasuk Yod Aleph. Shmor lecha, et asher anochi mitzavecha hayom. Hineni goresh vanecha temori v'akhani v'achiti v'aprizi v'achivi v'ayivusi. Now these two pieces in one pasuk are a little bit odd. The first statement, the first half of the pasuk, is you guard that which I'm commanding you today. Okay, that's the Brit. And the second one is, I am going to, not a malach, but I am going to send away from you, Amori, Kanani, Chiti, Prizi, Chivi, Vivusi, mention here of six of the nations that live in the land that we're going to conquer. So it seems to me that this piece right here contains the essence of the Brit, which is, you're to keep my mitzvot, and my part of it is to help lead you through the conquest and settle the land. And now, the two come together. Hishamelacha, Pentikrot Brit liyosheva aretz, asher ata ba'aleha, penyel mokesh bekirbecha. Be very careful not to cut a brit with yosheva aretz. Now this is an apposition to what we just heard. Hinei anochi kore brit. I'm going to make a brit with you, but don't you make a brit with the people who live there, the ones you're supposed to destroy and the ones that I will eradicate. Why? Because it will be a trap for you. Why will it be a trap? So we're going to hear about that in a couple of psukim and in much more detail in Sefer Dvarim. Ki, and here the word ki means rather. Don't make a brit, but rather. And means b'chotam titotzun v'et matzevotam tishabirun v'et asherav tichrotun. There are three worship types that are mentioned here and in Dvarim that we have to attack. One of them is their mizbachot, their altars. Altars typically are made up of a group of stones piled together. So titotsun, you break them apart. Matseva is a single stone that's raised up. What do you do with the matsevot? Break them. And asherav, the asherah trees, tichrotun, cut them down. Asherah was a tree that was typically planted next to the altar of Baal worship, and the tree was Asherah, who was the female consort of Baal in Canaanite pagan thinking. Why? Ki lo tishtachav el acher. You are not to bow to any other god. Ki Adonai kanashimo el kanahu. God's name, God's essence, is one of jealousy. He is a jealous God. Now this is something that a lot of people are very uncomfortable with. But it's important to note that one of the critical differences between monotheism and polytheism, or paganism, is that paganism is very tolerant. You can worship this god, I'll worship that god. If I'm in your town, I'll worship your god. I'll bring an offering to him. It's all good, because it's all there, because it's all man-made. Monotheism demands allegiance to the one true God, and in its more radical form, which is really Torah, it also demands an eradication of obeisance to any other foreign gods or belief that there are any other foreign gods who exist or have any powers. And so now, that's the essence of the jealousy here, that the worship of God demands exclusivity. And this, of course, became the great battle of syncretism, against syncretism, which is most clearly and explicitly expressed in Eliyahu's words on Har HaKarmel, Im Hashem Elokim l'chu acharav, Im Abba l'chu acharav. You can't dance at two weddings, you can't walk over two lintels, either you worship Baal or you worship Hashem, and the people want to do both. And he continues on, Pentikrot Brit Liyoshev Aretz, Do not make a brit with the people. That's in Pasuk Yod Bet. Lest if you make a people with them, with a brit with the people who live there, in other words, somehow they stay there. Now, what that means is that when Hashem said, I will send them out, that means I will send them out, but of course you've got to actively participate in that. And if instead you want to live together with them and make a brit with them, what's going to happen? V'zanu acharei Elohim. They will whore. Who's they? Future generations. But I doesn't want to say it in the second person. They will whore after their gods, v'zavchu l'Elohim, and they will offer to their gods, and then they will summon you and you will eat from their korban. Now who is Vizanu? The simple read of the text syntactically is it's referring to the pagans. They will go after their gods, they'll offer to their gods, and they'll summon to you to eat from them. But that's a very strange phrase, because to say that pagans are zonim acharei Elohim is odd, because the use of the word zoneh, to whore after or stray after, means you've got a commitment in one place and you leave it, like a woman who commits adultery, who abandons the loyalty and the brit that she has with her husband. Zanu acharei Elohim, and that's something the Nevi'im employ that imagery all the time about Bnei Yisrael doing Avodah Zarah. But to call a pagan doing Avodah Zarah znut is very strange. So it seems that what's cleverly happening in this pasuk is, if you make a brit with Yoshev Haaretz, with the people who live there, then you're going to whore after their gods, but it puts you in the third person, doesn't want to say it directly, and you're going to offer to their gods, and then ultimately they're going to summon you back in, meaning, and now I'm talking in the second person, that really is you. And what will happen? You're going to end up taking their daughters for your sons. And what will happen? And his daughters will follow their gods. And they will cause your sons to follow after their gods. Notice here an interesting piece, that the prohibition against making the brit is like three steps of problem. Make a brit, what will happen? Then these people are going to follow their gods. They'll summon to you, you'll follow their gods. What will happen next? You'll intermarry. And then the daughters are going to cause your sons, who's your sons? So Chazal understand that means your grandsons, that they will follow their gods, or your own sons who married them. And so it seems to be a very strange context here, which is not that there's a problem. Of course, there is a problem. But the problem being accentuated here is not that you're going to do Avodah Zarah, but rather by doing Avodah Zarah, you will be intermingled with them, you will intermarry with them, and then your children and your grandchildren will then be raised in that culture of Avodah Zarah. Very odd, considering that Avodah Zarah directly is an obviously a very problematic thing, and the huge and the biggest realm of prohibition that's in the Torah. And now, what's added in is Elohim Masecha lo ta'aserach. Do not make molten images as gods. Clearly, this is added relative to the parallel brit at the end of Mishpatim because of the Masecha of the Eyal. Now, the reason I say added is because if you look at the rest of this passage, it's very similar to the passage in Mishpatim, as the Rishonim point out along the way. The Ramban points out, Chizkuni points out, all point out that this passage is very similar because this is recovenanting and re-signing that brit. But certain things are added in. We'll see a couple others along the way as a result of the Egel. At Chag HaMatzot Tishmor. That we saw already. Shivat yamim tochal matzot asher tzivitichal l'moed chodesh aviv. For 7 days you'll eat matzot as I commanded you, in the appointed time, which is in the month of the spring. Ki b'chodesh aviv yatzatim mitzrayim. That's the month you went out of Mitzrayim, that's when you're going to celebrate it. And now something that was not in the previous one, which is Kiddush Bechorot. Kol peter rechem li. The opening of the womb belongs to me. Anything that opens the womb. And all of your male cattle or herd, the one that opens up the ox or the lamb, that belongs to me. Remember back in Parshat Bo, if you have a firstborn donkey, you have to redeem it with a seh, which you give to the Kohen. If you don't redeem him, then you have to break the chamor's neck. You don't get the chamor back. And now, kol b'chor banecha tifteh. What do you do with your firstborn sons? You redeem them. V'lo yira'u fanai rekam. And my face should not be seen empty, meaning when you come to me, do not come empty. The connection between this and the previous, it seems to be out of context, and it's going to show up a little bit further, but it seems to be a lead-in to this next section. We already mentioned Chag HaMatzot, and now suddenly we go back to the holidays in the following. Shesh Yamim Tavod, Uvayom HaShavir'i Tishpot, Becharish Uvakatzir Tishpot. And there's a remarkable machloket Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva on this pasuk we have to mention. The first half of it is about Shabbat. For 6 days you work, and on the seventh day you rest. What do we do b'charishu v'katzir tishpot? So Rabbi Shmuel says, b'charishu v'katzir tishpot is about Shabbat, and it's two specific malachot, two of only four maximum that are mentioned in the Torah, which were prohibited, which is plowing and harvesting. Those are two that are very typical in an agrarian society, and they're selected here. Rabbi Shmuel says, why is it mentioned? Because Macharish Rishut Af Katsir Rishut. You have to remember that the biggest dispute that existed at the end of Bayit Sheni times, just before Rabbi Shmuel's era, was the dispute about the calendar. And the dispute about the calendar chiefly revolved around the issue of the Korban HaOmer. The Korban HaOmer, according to the sectarians, with barley, was always cut on a Saturday night and always brought on a Sunday, which in their calendar, which we recently recovered in the last 50, 60 years, from the Dead Sea Scroll, from the Library at Qumran, was always on the 15th of Sivan, always a Sunday. That Saturday night, they cut the Omer, and the next day it was offered up. Our halacha, our understanding is that whatever day Pesach starts, the next night it is cut, and the next day it is brought. And even if that night is Shabbat, it's cut. And one of the drashot that supports that, a long discussion in Masechet Menachot, Daf Samechei, about the fact that Mocharat Shabbat does not mean Sunday, also in the Sifra, also in the Rambam, and in the Kuzari, and everybody addresses the issue. And Rabbi Shmuel's drashot is supported is, Macharish Rishut Af Katsir Rishut. Just like every plowing you could ever do would be plowing of a voluntary nature, no mitzvah involved. Similarly, the only katsir that's prohibited on Shabbat is voluntary katsir. You're harvesting because you want to harvest, as opposed to yatsak katsir ha'omer shemitzvah, as opposed to cutting for the omer, which is a mitzvah, which is therefore mutar on Shabbat. And that was a small piece of the very large collection of ammunition against the sectarians supporting the idea that we do katsirat ha'omer even on Shabbat in the event that Pesach starts on a Pesach is on a Thursday, the first day of Yom Tov is on a Friday, and Friday night would be the time of Ksirat HaOmer. In our calendar, that can't work out in any case, but that was how that pasuk was interpreted. Rabbi Akiva said, B'charish v'katzir is not talking about Shabbat, because there's no need to mention those prohibitions. It's under the general category of malacha. But rather, he says, Charish and Katzir are referring to another Shabbat, which is Shemitah. Charish and Katzir are the two major activities that are prohibited during Shemitah. And he said, why does it mention it? And the reason is to give us a prohibition of Tosefet Shemitah, that we have to cease plowing and planting for at least a month, and perhaps longer, a sugya in Masechet Shvi'it, and the Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, about not plowing or planting during a particular season before the Rosh Hashanah of Shemitah. Similarly, there's an Isur of Katsir at the end of Shemitah going into the eighth year. And so that machloket about that pasuk. In any case, we continue with the calendar of Chag Shavuot Ta'aseh Lecha Bikurei Katsir Chitim. And famously, Shavuot, as we saw in Mishpatim, and as we see everywhere else in Tanakh, is not associated with Matan Torah, but is purely presented as an agricultural holiday. You are to make a Chag Shavuot, which is at the very beginning of harvesting the wheat, So that's going to be in May or June. V'chag ha'asif t'kufat ha'shana, a festival of gathering fruit at the end of the year, and that is, of course, Sukkot. Shalosh pe'amim b'shana yira'eh kol zechurcha et p'nei ha'adon Adonai Elohei Yisrael. And this again repeats, all of these are a repetition from what we saw at the end of Mishpatim, the brit at the end of Mishpatim. Three times a year, all of your males should see now Ha'adon, the Master, Adonai, Elohei Yisrael. So the Ben Ezra says, why is Elohei Yisrael added in here? Because of the eagle. Because what did they say at the eagle? Eir Elohecha Yisrael. No, no, no. You bring your firstborn to be seen by, because you cannot see, because he is not tangible, but to be seen by the real Elohei Yisrael. And now, continuing on, and this is also a new twist that happens within this context. Ki orish goyim mipanecha yirchavti et gvulecha. I am going to dispossess nations from in front of you, and I'm going to broaden your border, which means when you're making this aliyah l'regel, you may be coming from a distance. So there's a concern there, and the concern is that other people are going to want to take my land. There is another promise, and this promise, by the way, goes beyond the original brit. It's an even greater promise. Nobody will desire your land as you come up to be seen by Hashem three times a year, meaning you can safely make the aliyah l'regel and not be worried that your land is going to be taken or be captured while you're gone. A very powerful thing. You have to remember, in Mishpatim, the way that this somewhat parallel passage was, is that I will not dispossess them right away, because then you'll have too many animals there. It's going to be slowly. Here, there's no mention of the slowly, and the opposite. It sounds like it's going to be quite a quick dispossession, and again, you have to keep the brit. And now we have two psukim that are almost verbatim of what we saw at the very end of the brit in Mishpatim. We'll comment on the very end of this. Lo tishchat al chametz dam zivchi. Do not slaughter al chametz, which means halachically while you own chametz, the dam zivchi, which is referring to the Pesach. And this is the isur, it's a lo taseh in the Torah, to own chametz in the afternoon of the 14th, because that's the time at which you should be slaughtering the Korban Pesach. And a separate isur is that the Korban Pesach should not stay overnight. It should be eaten up during the night, as we read in Mitzrayim, Ototur Menuat Boker. And the last pasuk of this section, Reshit Bikurei Admatecha Tavi Beit Adonai Levacha, we saw this exact thing in Mishpatim. Bring your first fruits to the house of Hashem, and do not seethe a kid in its mother's milk. This prohibition, which is very famous, it's the prohibition of mixing milk and meat, and it's worded in this way in which you are not to seethe a kid in its mother's milk, which is a very odd wording, has led to a whole literature of commentary on two things. One is, three things really. One of them is, why is there a prohibition against mixing milk and meat? Another is, why is it worded in this odd way instead of lotra shaba sarba chalav? And the third one is, why does it show up three times in the Torah? And famously, we have a number of drashot about why it shows up three times in the Torah. A very famous one, it's quoted in the Gemara in Masechet Chulin at the beginning of the eighth parak, is that there is an isur bishul, there's a prohibition of cooking it, there's an isur achila, an isur of eating it, and isur of hana'a, an isur really of getting any sort of benefit, like selling it, feeding it to your animals, etc. That's one component. There's another midrash that shows up in the Michilta, in the Midrash Halacha and Shmot, that says that there are three of them corresponding to the three britot. The brit at Har Sinai, that's here. The brit at Arvot Moav, that's when Moshe is about to pass away. And the brit of Har Grizim and Har Eval. And I'd like to take a look at those two explanations, or those two identifiers, and address the issue of why this prohibition, why it's worded the way it is. And in the literature, there are numerous explanations of both the prohibition and the wording, and there are three main streams. there is an approach taken by Rambam and by Sforno, which is that Lo Tavashog Dibachalev Imo must be referring to some pagan practice. And indeed, in 1929, we found a tablet in Ugarit that may indeed confirm what Rambam suspected. Rambam himself presented it as just a suggestion, that there was a pagan fertility rite that involved taking a kid and slaughtering it and then cooking it in its own mother's milk. There is an approach which is very popular among numerous Rishonim, which is that Lo Tavashog Dibachalev Imo is weird the way it is, and the prohibition is anchored in making sure to avoid things which will dehumanize us, which will demonstrate a ruthlessness, how thoughtless it is to kill a kid and cook it in its own mother's milk, even though the mother might not be present and the kid is already dead, but the behavior is ruthless and is inappropriate for us. And to support that, those Rishonim who advocate that position parallel it with Otovet Beno and Shivat Yamim and other prohibitions that we have, and Shiloh HaKein, which indicate that we're supposed to engender in ourselves a behavior which is kind and thoughtful and sensitive, even in cases where we are allowed to kill an animal, but we have to do it in a sensitive way. And then there is yet a third approach taken among some, which is that mixing milk and meat is one of the examples of the kilayim, of taking things which are independently permitted, but the mixture is prohibited. And there's seven different kinds of kilayim that we have in halacha. There's kilei hakerem, of mixing vineyard and wheat. There's kilei zraim, different seeds. Kilei ilan, different trees. There's kilei bgadim, which is shatnez, wearing wool and linen together. There is basar b'chalav, as we have here. There's kilei klaim of animals, which is harba'at kilaim, mating animals together, and there's working with animals that are not the same kind of animal and working them together. And all of these are discussed in the halacha, both in Masachet Kilaim and throughout Shas in different places. And so there's three different sort of general streams of thinking, along with all sorts of sub-tributaries, on what the prohibition of Lo Tavashog Dibachalev Imo. So I'd like to bring all of these things together, both the three different britot, the three different prohibitions, and the three different explanations for them, and to look at them really in context. The first time that the Isur of Lo Tavashog Dibachalev Imo, and again, all three of them show up with the exact same lettering and wording, and even Tamei Mikra. The first one is in Parshat Mishpatim. And Parshat Mishpatim, which we studied together, it comes at the end of a passage which seems to be focused and devoted to caring for the underprivileged. It comes after the prohibitions of mistreating the stranger and taking care of the orphan and the widow, etc. That's one context. The context here is a context of Avodah Zarah. We have just recovered, as it were, from the terrible Chet HaEgel, and if it isn't outright Avodah Zarah, it certainly borders on it. The extra prohibition of here of Elohim Asecha Lo Taselach gives birth to that. And the third mention, which is in Parshat Re'eh, is in the context of the sanctity of the nation. Right, the Banim Atem Hashem Elokeichem Am Kadosh Ata, and then all the prohibited foods show up, and it's followed at the very end. It's the prohibition of Nevela, and you may sell a Nevela, and Lo Tavashog Dibachalev Imo. So I'd like to suggest that really these three different mentions also associate with the three different reasons for the prohibition, in the context of taking care not to hurt the underprivileged in Parshat Mishpatim, that associates itself beautifully with the issue of not cooking kid in its mother's milk, because it's a very ruthless and cruel behavior towards this thing that you've killed. You have power over it, and now you're misusing it this way. The prohibition here is in the context of Avodah Zarah, and very much speaks to the Rambam and the Sforno's approach that this is a pagan practice. And in the context of Sefer Dvarim, it speaks to the Kedushah of Am Yisrael. And Kedushat Am Yisrael is about separation and about sanctity and proper zones for each thing and not having them mixed together, and seems to speak much more to the issue of the Kilayim involved. And that itself speaks really to the three different prohibitions. Because if you think about it, the act of cooking them together really seems to be the violation of kilayim. You're mixing different things together. The prohibition of cooking them together really seems to speak to the cruelty of it, because the act of cooking. The prohibition of eating seems to connect much more to the issue of kedusha. And it's, after all, in Dvarim, it's listed with all the other prohibited foods. And the prohibition of hana'ah seems to speak to its association with avodah zarah, which, of course, is prohibited by hana'ah as well. And the final component is that this also speaks to the three different britot that we had. What's the brit at Har Sinai? The brit at Har Sinai is a brit of kedusha. It's about sanctity. And everything about Har Sinai, the boundary around the mountains, and everything else is all about sanctity, about Kedusha. The Brit at Arvot Moav seems to be some related very much to Avodah Zarah, because why is there a need for new Brit? Part of the reason is we have just recovered from Avon Por, for interaction with Avodah Zarah. And the brit at Har Gerizim and Har Eival is all related to how we treat each other and how we take care of each other. And there's a lot more to be said about that, but it seems that these three mentions and the three distinct prohibitions align themselves both with the three different general explanations for the Isur and its wording, and with the three different britot that we went through upon in the desert and upon entering the land. Okay, let's take a look at the last passage here in the parsha, Pasuk Chav Zayin. Vayomar Adonai Moshe, Ketov lecha et ha-devarim ha-eile. Ha-devarim ha-eile seems to refer to this last passage. You're to write it down. Now remember, originally Hashem said, come up to me and I will give you ha-Torah v'mitzvah. And now, of course, man has to be more involved. And so therefore you write this down, just like you had to carve out the tablets. Ki al-pi ha-devarim ha-eile, Karati it chavrit vet Yisrael. It's based on these words that I've made the brit. These are the words of the brit. So what happens? Vayisham im Adonai abayim yom v'abayim laila. Again, Moshe is with them, with Hashem, for 40 days and 40 nights. Lechem lo achal umayim lo shata. We didn't hear that the first time, but here he doesn't eat anything, doesn't drink anything. It's all quite miraculous. Vayichtom al haluchot et divrei abrit aseret advarim. What's vayichtov? This is not Moshe. How do we know that? Because Hashem said, "V'chatavti al luchot." So Hashem now writes on the luchot the 10 things. In the meantime, Moshe has written down this brit. Vayhi beredet Moshe mihar Sinai u'shnei luchot ha'idut biyad Moshe berito minahar. Moshe lo yada ki karan or panav bedabero ito. So as Moshe comes down from Har Sinai, and he has the two tablets of testimony in his hand. As he comes down, Moshe did not know that his face was now lit up. It was glowing. The skin of his face was glowing. Why? Because Hashem had spoken with him. And this goes back to several incidences where Moshe has this direct exposure to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has this effect. What happens? Vayara Aaron v'chol b'nei Yisrael Moshe, v'nei karan or panav. Aaron and b'nei Yisrael see him as he comes down, and suddenly he's glowing. They're afraid to come close to him, as Bnei Israel before were afraid to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Moshe summons them. Who comes? Not everybody. Aaron and the Nesiim. And Moshe speaks to them. Now what does he speak to them? Assume that he speaks to them and somehow comforts them that they can come closer. Then call Bnei Israel, whatever that may mean, all the leaders, heads of household, everybody, then come close. And now, then he transmits the mitzvot that Hashem gave him at Har Sinai. Meaning, first he spoke to the Nesiim to comfort them that it's okay to come close. Then somehow they get all of their people to come, and Hashem and Moshe then transmits the mitzvot. Vaychal Moshe midaber itam, vayten al panav masveh. After Moshe finished speaking with them, he put a cover, some sort of garment, over his face, as if to say, when I'm giving you the mitzvot, so seeing the glory is a good thing. But it's too much for you, so when I'm not giving you the mitzvot, I'm just acting, I'll put over this cover over my face, so you don't have to be scared by it. So when Moshe comes into that tent, remember the tent that he put outside of the machaneh, to speak with him, he takes the masveh until he leaves. He will come out and he'll tell Bnei Israel what Hashem commanded him. This is the model now. Moshe is going to go into the tent, take the masveh off, Hashem will speak to him. Moshe will come out, masveh is off, he speaks to them and gives them the mitzvot. And then, they looked at him and they saw it, that his face was glowing. And then he put the masveh back on his face until he came in again, which means Moshe would keep this masveh over him. We don't know what it looks like, we don't know how much it covered, but it protected the people from seeing him, and he would take it off, and the system was he would take it off, go in, get mitzvot, come out and tell them. Now, how long did this last? Does this last now throughout the Midbar? Does this last only as long as they're at the foot of Har Sinai? Does it last through Parshat, through the Parshiot of Vayikra? We don't know. But it's the only time that we hear about this Masveh. And so is this giving us a plan for the next, through the rest of Moshe's life and his leadership? Or is it sort of a temporary thing? We really don't know. But that brings us to the end of our Parsha. I want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom. And it's been very enjoyable studying Parshat Ki Tisa. Next week we will be studying Parshat Vayakel and Pekudei together. In the meantime, everybody should have a Shabbat Shalom.